Welcome to episode 205 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace. I'm here with Nick and Marty. How are we, guys?
Feeling really good, thanks, Jace. Inspired by Nick Riley's last episode on diversification, risk grading on your investments. Very, very great stuff. And today I want to talk about self-managed super funds. So I started one up a few years ago and yeah, I've got some good stats on it. I think it will appeal to the audience. So, Dick, how are you?
I'm good, mate. And I'm inspired. So, would you go? No doubt you went and pumped a heap of money in some undervalued stocks last week. Or talk us through
just it. Just buying the dip. waiting for the crash, buying the dip.
Okay, just looking for some value. Anything you got for us?
Just go and talk to Luke Mace because he's the one to keep the emotions in check. That's for sure. Charlie nearly had a conniption when the Poulter Group share he invested in as his first share come plummeting down back to even. I said, hey, you're doing all right. You haven't lost anything. But to a 10-year-old kid, he doesn't want to lose that $2 that he earned.
How much was he up?
It was pretty funny. He was up. What was he up? About $21.
But percentage-wise?
Percentage-wise, 11%. Huh. And he's back down to about 2%. And it might be better now because he, we're through the volatility, I think, but it could still go down. But he's sort of saying it shows you the emotion, though. He goes, let's just sell it, just in case. Let's just sell it. And I go, but it costs $3 to sell it. So then you're negative one. And we're holding this for 10 years, remember? Remember the plan. Yeah. And it's so it just goes to show you, even though we discussed the plan, how emotional that $3 can be.
Yeah, well, mate, look, as long as he's got 6 months of lunch money put aside, then he's just got no need to sell it. He's got an appropriate risk profile.
I wish my lunch was only costing that amount. But anyway, on the topic that you've brought up here, Marty, I'm excited to dive into it too. Probably, didn't say this beforehand, but one of the fastest growing areas at Future Advisory is accounting for self-managed super funds. We've got a lot of clients that are getting to a certain age where, and I guess a certain point of their business owner lives where, their businesses are more established, they're making more income, they're making the maximum super contributions. And all of a sudden there's these options that are popping up in relation to, buying property. And one of the things we talk about is structures, and you've got unit trusts and companies and owning things in your own name. But one of the other ones that is very popular is the old self-managed super funds. So yeah, love you to lead the conversation on what we're going to unpack today.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned this because in the finance business, I think we might've done about 5 or 6, finance deals the previous year in self-managed super funds. So it sort of went off the boil a little bit. But in talking to a lot of the brokers in the last couple of weeks, I reckon we've done 6 in 2 weeks. And I'm going, there's certainly something going on here from a growth perspective. And certainly people are looking to purchase property through it as well. But I thought I'd give you some stats on it just to whet the appetite as much as self-managed super funds can whet the appetite.
Marty. We like numbers. Give them to us.
Well, as of March 24 this year, 616,000 self-managed super funds are established, maintaining 1.1 million members. So the collective assets of the self-managed super funds are $933 billion. So that's 24% of the total invested in super of $3.9 trillion. So quite significant. 16% of those self-managed super funds, so 98,500 members, have direct residential or commercial property assets. So I like that because it's still, in my mind, underutilized. And I think we have a love affair with property. In Australia in particular, anytime we can get into property in some way, somehow, we will try and find that way. The medium age group of established self-managed super fund members was 62 years of age. That's for established. However, the average age of newly established members is 46. And the developing age group of 35 to 44 years of age is now 10% of all members. So there's certainly an appetite increase for people wanting to control their own future and their own money within the self-managed super fund. interesting to hear those stats in regards to growth, surprising or something, Jace, you're already seeing at the front end?
Yeah, I think those statistics just kind of drive home why we're starting to see more self-managed super funds at Future Advisory. Our kind of client's age group would definitely fall in that 35 to 44 group. So, you know, we've still got a younger client base compared to a lot of the other accounting firms out there that have a more, I guess, established client list if they've been around for 10, 20 years. We're a younger firm with a younger client list, but yeah, starting to get into that age group as well. So
what's involved in setting one up? Like how complex, how simple is it? Like what are the parameters of what you need to do to set up a self-managed super fund, first of all, Jace, just to give the audience some perspective?
Yeah, look, good question. I might get Nick involved here a little bit as well. From the accounting world, it's actually not that complicated. When I say, you know, when you've got the right people involved. So you've got to form a self-managed super fund trust deed. You've got to get that created by lawyers or a legal team, and usually through your accountant you can sort that out. Then you've got to decide whether to have an individual trustee or a corporate trustee. Now, anyone who gives good advice is angling towards a corporate trustee, which means that you've got a company in control of your self-managed super fund, and the company acts as the trustee, and then usually the members are the directors and shareholders. And look, the bit that I say why I wanted to get Nick involved in this is we strongly, and 99 out of 100, you know, what I'd say statistically over the years, have involved having a statement of advice from a financial planner. Unfortunately, in self-managed super fund territory over the years, while they are becoming more popular, they are also can be expensive to run. And there's a lot of mistakes that can happen. I guess if you hand over control to, you know, a couple of hundred grand worth or more of super fund assets and give the keys to an individual who can do the wrong thing or not get it right when it comes to investments and allocations, having a statement of advice from a financial planner is absolutely one of the biggest requirements we have and the industry has across the accounting industry for setting up a self-managed super fund. So yeah, Nick might be able to touch on the statement of advice and why that's required.
Let's be honest. It's a self-managed super fund, and you ask 99% of the population, talk me through how you're going to manage your super fund. The first thing they would say is, I don't know. So you know, there's no point dancing around it. The whole reason people want self-managed super funds in our country is to buy property. And I actually think that's a really good strategy as long as it's in line with, you know, the stuff that we've spoken about in previous episodes, risk profiles and whatnot. Most people, number one, won't have the ability, and number two, won't want to manage their own share portfolios. Or, you know, you can do some wacky things inside of the super fund, like, you know, buy art and these kinds of things. Most people won't want to get involved with that. The reality is most people in this country want to buy property, which I think is great if that's what you want to do, as long as you're buying the right type of property. So I think what a statement of advice does, and the ATO is pretty strict on this stuff now, Jace, they want people to understand that, okay, this is still your super. The whole reason we create super funds is so that when you retire, you have money there and you're not reliant on the government pension. So that's why we have industry funds. That's why we have employers pay a certain amount of someone's salary into the super fund. If someone to your point, Jace, gets the keys, they've actually got access to that money. So an individual now has access to their super fund, not legally, but they could literally log online and transfer the money out if that's what they wanted to do. So there's a lot of rules and regs around it. Particularly in setting one up. So what the statement of advice will do is it will stipulate what the risks are with setting one up, the things you need to be aware of, what it takes to run one. It will generally develop an investment strategy inside of that fund for you. So what are you actually trying to achieve with this fund? What is your risk profile? These types of things. So it's exactly the same as if you had an Australian super fund, as far as risk profile goes and the things you need to be aware of. The difference is, for most people, the difference that people are interested in is the fact that they can hold direct property inside of that fund. So one of the things that we see a lot of is, because we do manage quite a few self-managed super funds, People buy a property because that's what they wanted to do, but then they still want advice because they've bought the property and that was great, but they don't understand what that property does for them as far as retirement does. So is the strategy to pay the debt off? Is the strategy to buy another property? Is the strategy to start to diversify your funds within the self-managed super fund and go into some different stocks as well, or some more liquid investments, because property's not that liquid? So we're really just seeing super funds created, or self-managed super funds created, to access direct property, and then people still coming for advice because they still want to know how the whole thing works from an investment point of view to get them to their end goal. And that's where the financial plan will come in, and further to that, an investment strategy for the individuals.
Jace, what is a bear trust, and why do they have a bear trust when a property is being purchased in super?
Very good question, Marty. That is because self-managed super funds are prohibited from borrowing. So what you want to do there is it's basically separating your assets from the risk and separating your assets from the borrowing. So a bear trust is what's used to get the borrowing separated away from your self-managed super fund. So they're usually referred to as LRBA, which is limited recourse borrowing arrangements. And from what I hear from the teams, lovely teams that we work with for these, is it can be a little bit more complicated, a few more loan to value ratio requirements that the big banks I'm not even sure if the big banks do too much of it anymore, but the lenders, there's a lot more requirements that need to be ticked off in relation to this. But yeah, the self-managed super fund itself doesn't take on debt, so it can't do loans.
Perfectly explained. That's one thing people trying to buy property in the self-managed super fund just can't get their head around. So I think beautiful explanation. But in regards to, even in regards to the major banks, the appetite has moved away from them wanting to fund properties in the self-managed super fund. So they're not coming down on rates. So you've got a lot of clients around that 9.5% to nearly 10% that are actually locked into that rate. So they can't go back to the lender and refinance at a better rate. And it's very frustrating because it's eating into, it's eating into your future, really. So we're seeing a lot of people come to us at the moment and look for other alternatives. And we're getting some really good rates, and some, depending, like you said, the lower the loan to value ratio, the better the rate. The higher the loan to value ratio, the higher the risk, the higher the rate. But we're seeing significant savings. Like instead of 9.5%, we're down to sometimes even down to low 7%, which has a significant difference to clients' future now and in the future. So that's something, if you're looking to refinance, definitely reach out, because there are lenders there that are very good at this type of lending and are hungry to actually, service these types of deals. So we're seeing a lot of that happening over the last couple of months in particular, but it seems to be growing. And you generally see people, and look, I'm being very generic here, but buy properties within that 600 to 800 grand range. And most people generally will have around about 400 to 500 in super looking to purchase a property. Now, 86% of all self-managed super funds have balances greater than 200,000, which makes sense because there's a bit more costing in setting them up as well. And even at that 200 level, you could still look to buy property just at a lesser value. The other thing to appreciate is liquidity ratios as well. So even though you might be utilizing your funds within super to buy an investment, you still need to have, and it depends on which lender, 5 to 10% of stocks held that you have liquidity other than property. And I think that's purely, I would think, Nick, that's just purely a diversification play to make sure you're not putting everything in one bucket.
It's probably more about getting you through a difficult time. So, hypothetically, it's untenanted, the property's untenanted for 12 months. You've obviously got a loan repayment that's got to be met. So that's just trying to, it definitely comes back to diversification for sure, but it's just making sure that, if there's an issue with that property over a short period, you're not going to be forced to sell it. There's going to be some cash there.
Okay. Yeah. And look, just to give you an example of the numbers, like people have been moving into purchasing in their super, property in their super, because sometimes at the moment, cash flow's a little bit strapped outside of super. So let's just say we want other alternatives. We want to, you know, we can only borrow so much in our given our incomes. And this is another vehicle where we can look to potentially acquire another property to work for us in the future. So to give you an example, what they will look at is they'll look at what is the rent you're receiving for the property, and they'll take the rent at 80%. This is how the lenders look at it. And they'll also look at your super contributions. Now, that's all they will really look at in regards to servicing that debt within the super fund. So let me give you a couple of examples. If someone purchased for $800,000, their minimum contribution towards the purchase was $330,000, covers the stamps. And this is at 65% loan-to-value ratio. So this means you're borrowing $520,000, and at 7.5%, let's be conservative there, we'd probably be able to get better, that's $39,000 a year. Now, the bank will assess it at a buffer rate of 2% on top of that. So it'll be assessed at 9.5%. So that's about $49,400 a year. So let's take our rent. Let's say on an 800 grand property, we're getting $700 a week, $36,400 per annum. At 80%, you get $29,120. And then you'd need your super contributions to cover the difference. So basically on that metric, you'd need a couple of people earning 100 grand each to be able to execute on that deal at a higher level. Or if you're an individual, around about 200,000 to be able to make that deal happen. Now, to give you like just a smaller scale type of investment, let's say you're buying for 500,000 and you want to go up to 80% of the value. So with residential property, you can go up to 80%, but of course, you know, there's slightly more risk, so sometimes the rates are a bit higher. With commercial property, you can go up to 75% as a maximum on a commercial property within super. So let's work on the 500 grand scenario. 110,000 contribution towards the purchase to cover the 20% plus stamps. So you're borrowing 80%, which is 420,000. That 7.5% is 31,500. And if we look at that buffer at 9.5%, that's 39,900 in the way the bank will assess that deal. Rent of 480 a week, you know, better yield, bigger the yield, the better, obviously. 24,960 coming in per annum at 80%, 19,968. So on that 80% level, you would still need two people on 100 grand to make it work, or an individual on 200 grand, because we're leveraging up and we need the super on the income to be adequate, as well as the rent at 80% to cover that. And if we treated that, let's say we only borrowed 65% on that 500,000, bigger contribution going in of 205,000 to cover costs. This is at 65%. That means we borrow 325,000. Sorry, a lot of numbers, I know. 7.5%. That's 24,375. At 9.5% on the buffer, that's 30,875. But now we've got rent still at 480. 24,960 per annum at 80%, 19,968. Now, in this situation, you could have two people on 65,000 income to make this work, or an individual at $120,000 per annum. So I know that's a lot of numbers there, but I just want to bring it up in saying that if you can put together a bigger contribution, you want this to be neutral or positive, you know, where you can, because you want your asset to be growing as well as the yield being good as well. So it all comes back to individual circumstances and seeing what works for you. But that gives you, you know, just some high level numbers there of what you'd need to be earning to be buying at those levels based on the super you're getting off your wage as well as rent. Makes sense, lads?
Lots of numbers, but good numbers.
Lots of numbers. Makes sense. Yeah, and look, I mean, these are the things about self-managed super fund. You know, it is a lot of numbers and a lot of things to make sense of. You know, on the bear trust that we mentioned before, you need one of them for every single property you own. So, you know, there's things to learn about a self-managed super fund that, you know, you don't know right now. And if you are looking to get into it, you got to start having these conversations and start to broaden the knowledge. But this is also an opportunity for those people that are sitting back going, geez, I don't know how I can get into the property market. You know, I haven't built a big enough deposit personally, but potentially, you know, you have been working for a long time and in your super fund, it's been going up in the right direction. This is potentially an opportunity to look to diversify by getting some property through your super fund. Again, I stress the importance of talking to a financial advisor because it's, you know, while we think property may be the best outcome, maybe it is the stock market and a different diversification or different asset allocation as we've been learning in recent eps. But yeah, we've definitely seen self-managed super funds used so well though, especially as I said, for commercial property purchases where let's say a plumbing business or, you know, a trade or construction business is able to rent their own property off their self-managed super fund. So, you know, you become your own landlord. Again, there's all these different rules, but yeah, very interesting stuff if you can pull it off.
Yeah, and just to put into an example of a strategy too and why this can really work if people have the right strategy. But, you know, just picture a 40-year-old couple buying for 500K, as Marty suggested there. The one thing that you will do in the super fund is you will pay the debt off. So, you know, hypothetically, you've got a repayment over 30 years so that when you get to age 70, which might be your retirement age, that asset that you bought for 500, there's now zero debt on that asset. So the challenge is, well, quite often that property will not provide enough income from a rental point of view to support those people in retirement. So let's just pick some numbers here. But if you bought that property for 500K when you were 40 years old, by the age of 70, surely in 30 years' time, it's going to be worth $2 million, give or take. Yep. Agree with that, Marty?
Yeah, yep. I'd be happy with that, absolutely. Yep. I'm just getting excited.
Now, let's say the yield on that, I'm just, again, picking numbers. You'd say the yield's 4%, which is $80,000 a year. Take off some cost rates and stuff, maybe $75,000 a year. But fast forward 30 years, it's probably not going to be enough for people to live off. So whilst people are buying properties in their super fund, generally when they get to retirement, they're generally liquidating them because so much of that value in their super fund is tied up in an illiquid asset now. Say $2 million is tied up in money they can't touch and they need to get it because they need to retire on it. But what they can do in their super fund is obviously sell that property, and because they've rolled into pension phase, it's actually zero tax on it. So instead of you buying in your own personal name at age 40, getting to the age of 70, that property's gone up by $1.5 million. You're probably not working at the time, so you've got no income outside of the capital gain, but the capital gain is going to be $1.5 million spread across you and your partner. Obviously, you'd halve that in two, so what's that, Jase, help me out here, $750, but divided by two, so you're still paying tax on $375 each.
Yep.
Which would be, Jase, how much? Give me a rough number in today's.
Well, nearly half of that, so $150,000 to $160,000.
Each? Yep, so about $300,000 in tax on that scenario. Yep. And you will get to the point, as I said, you'll need to sell it because people need to realise those funds. So buying it in that super fund means that, well, number one, you sell it and you don't pay capital gains. And then number two, that money is then stuck in that inside that super fund. So because you're in pension phase, you let's say you sell that property for $2 million, you've then got $2 million to put into a conservative asset like a term deposit earning you 5% a year. $2 million on 5% is $100,000. And there's no tax on that because it's inside the super environment. So you're getting $100,000 a year tax-free. So it is a really cool strategy. If you get in early, if you get in early and you just have a slow strategy to pay it off and you've got a debt, you know, you've got no debt come retirement with an asset that's, you know, probably conservatively worth $2 million in 30 years' time, pretty good way to dodge tax is the wrong word. Avoid paying tax when you didn't need to.
Correct.
It's a legitimate, strategy.
Yeah, and that is why. I mean, even the SMSF or super funds in general being taxed at 15% through all of the earnings and the growth, and you know, the dividends, the interest earned on savings, all the rest of it. You know, if you think about if that was in your own name, that maximum tax rate's 47% right now. So there's a huge benefit throughout the lifetime of growing that wealth. And then as you said, Nick, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. Imagine getting that, you know, $1.5 million capital gain event, zero tax, tax-free. That's where it's at, baby.
Yeah, and that's, you know, just for everyone out there, not to get confused with the 15%, but once you do hit preservation age and you can roll into pension phase, no tax. So, yep. And that's why, again, it's important. I'm not plugging advisors here, but to understand the strategy. Okay, what is the strategy? What's the long-term plan here? Okay, we really probably need to make sure we keep this until we're in the preservation age, because then we're not going to pay any capital gain. So we've got to make sure we have a strategy that allows us to do that.
Jason, in regards to the usage of the investment, like you said, there's some pretty strict parameters around that. Big difference in buying a commercial property that you operate your business out of, as opposed to buying a residential property that you want to work from home, which you can't do. And I've had that come up a couple of times. Just maybe give some guidance around that.
Definitely. There's just so strict rules around the use of that. So, you know, when a commercial business, a company is renting off a self-managed super fund, creates some arm's length that it is, you know, separate from the individual taking a benefit of that. Where it is residential property, absolutely cannot be used by you, a family member. You know, you can't purchase a holiday house in your self-managed super fund and, you know, when it's not being rented out on the weekends or, you know, during the week, head down there and just enjoy the property. And heaps of different little requirements too. You know, there's a reason self-managed super funds, while they make up a good percent and there's a good number of them, there's also a reason that, you know, people aren't just going out every week and setting up a new self-managed super fund and rolling their super over. You know, you've got to get it audited every year. You've got to pay accounting fees. You know, usually there's an advisor involved, you know, which you want to have involved to help manage that. So there's a lot of ins and outs. And then if you do get it wrong, I mean, this is where you can see some really bad ramifications of getting it wrong, you know, the fines, the penalties, being struck off the register so that you can't receive contributions. You know, if you go over the caps, if you don't hit the pensions, if pension drawdowns properly, there's a lot of rules that you've got to follow. So it's not for the faint-hearted who think, you know, just set it up and, you know, forget about it. These are things that need to be constantly monitored and you know, put some energy and attention into.
And I think with self-employed people, sometimes they don't always pay their super to themselves as they should. I think that would be something that would come up, and then they want to buy, obviously, a property in their super fund. So that brings with it its own challenges. But how can we get more money into super as a business owner, Nick, in regards to the caps that are available? And then from an accountancy piece, I guess, you know, showing the consistency of that continuing into the future, because that's something from a finance perspective, as long as we can get money in and show that it's sustainable, then that's, you know, that's a green light. So yeah, just from your perspective, Nick, on what can be, you know, what can be put in.
Yeah, well, I think it's actually a really good, it's actually a really good question, Marty, because I think as business owners and, you know, me myself in the early days, you fall into the trap of not putting money into super because you don't have to. If you're not paying yourself a salary and you're only paying yourself drawings, there's no requirement to put money into super. As to what you can put in, you know, the superannuation caps have gone up to 30K a year at the moment per individual. So if we're talking about a couple, that's 60 grand a year. So you can put in up to, you know, 30 grand a year each. And then that will come off as a tax deduction off your taxable income as well. So, you know, it's a really good habit to get into. You know, and if cash flow's tight, of course, if you're starting a new business, for sure, maybe put super off, particularly if you're younger. But the minute you've got the cash flow to do it, I'd recommend people at least get in the habit of, okay, well, if I was paying myself a salary of 100 grand and that's what I'm drawing from the business, I'm going to put the SGC component of that into super. And then you've also got the ability to carry forward any contributions you haven't used in the last 5 years. You can actually bring all those into one financial year now, which is highly, highly valuable, particularly for people that are experiencing whether it's a really good year in profits and they don't need all the money. If it's a property they sell and they've got a capital gain, that's worrying, they can make a big lump sum contribution. So, you know, we had a, I think I might have talked about this before, but we did have a couple that had a business. They'd put next to nothing into super over the last 5 years, sold a property, did very well, and they had a $110,000 tax bill, capital gain tax bill on that property. They hadn't put any money into super, either of them, for the last 5 years. So all of those contributions they hadn't used, we could bring those, carry those forward and use all those contributions in the 1 year, we actually reduced their tax bill by 90,000. So we got it down to 20, which is a 90K saving. So you can go back and use what you haven't used if you've had a really good year and you need to reduce your profits or your taxable income. But I would very much encourage people to get into the habit of putting money in every year, because it's also about time in the market. If you're not in property and you're just in investment markets, you need to be putting money in all the time, because we've spoken prior about markets that would continuously go up. You want your money invested and working for you. So the quicker you can get it in there.
And that this, you know, that that idea of how much money to put in, when to put it in, at least with our business owner clients with forced or not forced, we work tax planning into our annual engagement with clients. So, you know, sitting down at year end, looking at, you know, was there excess profits? Was there the capital gains tax events? And then reviewing what are the carry forward contributions caps on top of how much of their existing cap for the year did they use? And, you know, there is often that conversation where, you know, by forward planning this too, you know, you might be starting to think, well, maybe I'm not ready for a self-managed super fund now, but I know I've got a couple of good years ahead. I've structured my business or my life in a certain way that I know the next couple of years are all go time. Maybe then it's, well, this is something I should look into. Maybe I should utilize my caps rather than, you know, squirreling that money away and using it somewhere else in my personal name. It's getting that money into super, but where we're kind of dangling the carrot to clients in a fun way of getting them excited about their super fund is, hey, you might not want a self-managed super fund, but here are your options. Just education. You know, you can put the money in, because a lot of people think, oh, you know, I could carry forward those caps and maybe I'll get 100 grand in this year, another 100 grand in next year. And I've just topped up my super fund balance by 200 grand. I'm going to have 400 or 500,000 sitting there, but I can't touch it for another 30 years. You know, I'm just not that interested in investing into super right now. But all of a sudden, when you talk about a self-managed super fund and the ability to add a property to that, you know, the Australian dream's owning property, right? You know, it's what we love. People get excited by it. And if you can work that into your strategy moving forward to get excited about super, because you know that's it's a potential option, they're the conversations we're starting to have. And this is why I believe that, you know, self-managed super funds, again, Marty, I think you know, your notes touched on the growth of the number of super funds over the years. It was like 8,000 super funds set up, then 14,000 super funds set up. And I think in, you know, last year it was like 24,000 set up. So, yeah, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it doubled again and there was 50,000 super funds set up in the coming year. So, you know, watch this space. Again, maybe something we can revisit when the new data comes out, but I think it's going to be a rising area for, you know, for both of our businesses, is that self-managed super funds are going to be talked about, they're going to be looked at, and, you know, the great people who listen to the Numbers Game are going to be well aware of them and well educated.
Yeah, and 100%. A lot of people just, they come from the aspect of, oh, I just want to buy a property in super without the advice. But just listening to the last 5 minutes and hearing the parameters and learning those parameters and how to best utilize them, but coming from a holistic place too of looking at your overall position for the future is so, so powerful. Like, we all have inspiration and want to do one idea sometimes quickly before we work through it. So it's like, it's really important to get this guidance up front, because if you are making a play on it, it could be a 20-year play. It could be a 25-year play. So it's significant. So you want really great guidance to ensure that 25 years is really, really lucrative at the front end and also at the back end, once that comes into position where you can, you know, maybe sell it, keep it, whatever you want to do. So the other thing on the refinance point of view is just the difference between lenders as well, just in regards to the fee structures. Not only is there a rate differential between lenders, but sometimes the fees in regards to setting up the finance piece can vary from $495 to sometimes $2,000 to $3,000. So it's, again, really important to get the advice up front before you go into buying to know where you stand. You can get an approval in principle on it, even before you set up the company and the bear trust and various different things. So again, get the right advice from all different sectors, finance, accounting, and planning, and go into this really educated and make a great decision that stands the test of time. I just feel like It's a growing area. I think it will continue to grow, and it's a great vehicle to really make that financial future brighter.
Yep, well, 100%. And look, I'm going to go out here and just say it. You know, if you want a no-obligation consultation with Nick, Marty, Jace, or a combination of us all together where you can hear the tax side of things and the financial planning and mortgage broking side of things, we'd love to help you out on your self-managed super fund journey. So whether it's, you know, hitting up one of us guys on LinkedIn, finding our business's future advisory or innovate, or simplest place, you can even, you know, head there right now, go to @thenumbersgamepodcast. Give us a follow on Instagram and drop us a message. Marty, the famous influencer on Instagram, is very active on that podcast, on that platform. So we'll be happy to get your details and get in touch. As always, like, rate, share the show, get around it, subscribe on YouTube if you haven't yet. We're absolutely loving having that channel available for people as well to go and watch our faces and the silly things that we do. We've really loved you joining us. And Marty, thank you for the Self-Managed Super Fund conversation. It's been a great one for the audience. And until next time.
Super stuff. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.